Hello there, welcome to All About Symbian Insight number 41, if my numbers do not deceive me. Today we have myself, Steve Litchfield. We also have...
Me, Rafe Blanford.
And me, Ewan Spence.
Hey, Ewan's here. Oh, this should be fun.
Hey, I'm back for my summer holiday.
Yeah, it should be noted that both Ewan and I have little people running around our house about to interrupt us. So if we do disappear in a blaze of glory and a giggle of laughter, then you know where we've gone. Anyway,
Rafe just has a goblin.
And a dog.
And a cat.
And an owl.
Sometimes. On with the insight. Right, quickies. The All About Symbian pub meet is not going to be on the usual day. Rafe, would you like to explain?
Yes, that's right, Steve. As you know, for the last 5 years, we've had a pub meet the night before the smartphone show in London. However, this year there was a clash with another event, and that is, of course, an evening with S60. So we decided that rather than force people to choose between two events, would postpone the pub meet, which will probably happen sometime nearer Christmas, just as an informal pub meet. So we'll be attending the evening with S60, which is going to be held at the Nokia flagship store in Regent Street. So if you're the sort of person who previously came along to the All About Symbian pub meet, I really encourage you to come along to that. Come and say hello. Unfortunately, that does mean you won't get to hear Ewan doing his usual rabble-rousing to get the evening going, but I think it's still going to be a great evening and a good opportunity to meet with like-minded people.
I know, and I've been practicing my finish for Mystery Star Prize as well, which is quite disappointing.
But there will be a pub meet, won't there, guys, just a bit later in the year, maybe nearer Christmas?
Yes, probably be nearer Christmas. It will depend on sort of logistics and if there's anything else going on that we might hold it around. Indeed, we may sort of see what else is going on. But yes, no plans to announce at this point, but it will happen.
Okay, there's also the, just to mention, the Symbian smartphone show, if any listeners haven't been before, it's an annual event, obviously run by Symbian. This year it's the 21st, the 22nd of October, and it's basically free to attend, which is unlike some shows where you have to be a particular member of the press or have some accreditation or even pay lots of money. So the Symbian show is totally free. You just turn up, sign on the dotted line, say, I am John Smith, I'd like to come in, please, and they let you in for two whole days, and you can run around and talk to developers, play with demos, see talks, attend seminars. It's all rather wonderful. It's the annual pilgrimage for Rafe, Ewan and myself, and I'm really looking forward to it.
And this year it's being held at Earl's Court, so it's in central London, so if you're London based it's quite easy to get to. If you're just interested in meeting some of the developers, it's a great way to do it, but it's also a good opportunity to see some of the latest hardware and get an idea of the future direction of Symbian.
Yeah, it is worth pointing out that there are some of the seminar tracks are paid for tracks, but the majority of the events and on the floor are the free ones. If you're going to be doing some hardcore developing and want to go to those sessions, those will cost you a little bit and you need to book in advance at smartphoneshow.com.
Yeah, and it's also worth noting that I rather missed out last year, but there are some prizes being given away right, left and centre. You can attend I forget the name for it, there's a fancy name where you wander around the show floor in a particular trail going from developer A to B to C to D, and there's about 8 or 9 of them. And if you do them in the right order and get your pass stamped or whatever the equivalent is, you're in a draw, a very small draw, for some rather nice free phones, free accessories. So that's well worth having a go at if you do attend. Also, it's worth knowing, if you've attended the show before, not, as Rafe's mentioned, not to go to the Excel Centre, just because it's burned into your memory. It's not there, it's the other side of London, so you'll be about 10 miles out. Onwards then. In-depth, the N96 is now arriving, as you've seen on the site. We still haven't got our N96, but there are one or two imminently arriving. There's plenty of coverage around the web. I guess the number one question, we touched on this last week, is it still relevant? I've been quite impressed by some of the comparison photos coming out from the first adopters on how much thinner it is, even than the N95 Classic. So we've got something that's a bit wider than the N95, but thinner and more modern and sleeker, and, you know, kind of more iPhone-like. We haven't spoken to you for a few weeks. Have you got any opinions on the N96?
Well, it comes down to that styling question again. For my initial look, I'm not going to go near the N96 because it's got the keyboard layer underneath of the function keys that I don't like. But that's actually incredibly popular. What I do like is the fact, well, beforehand it had DVB-H in it, which is one of the digital television standards. And of course, that's not here in the UK. The trial for that finished. So even though the N96 was going to ship with this, it looked like we weren't going to get the sort of digital TV, which was one of the main bullet points in this device. Interestingly, the BBC, the Big Brother Corporate, the British Broadcasting Corporation, have actually released the iPlayer, which is their online and streaming, and also you can download on the PC, but I think that this is just a streaming client to allow you to watch the majority of UK television programmes up to seven days after they've been aired. Now, we don't know the ins and outs of this. There's going to be some copyrights and DRMs, and I suspect there's going to be some sort of geo-lock on here as well. But it does look like it's going to be really turn this into a much more media-centric device. I mean, we already have music and audio quite nicely signed into phones. We're starting to get things like YouTube. Having broadcast television in some form, and let's face it, most people who are watching TV on the move are going to be used to downloading files off the internet and from those famous dark corners that I always write about and putting them on the phone. Now we're giving them an official way. It's going to be interesting to see both the take-up of this and what this does to network bandwidth.
Yes. Do we know yet, Rafe, how widely are compatible this new version of BBC iPlayer will be in terms of spreading around the rest of the N series and S60 phones?
It is actually going to be quite widely compatible because it uses H.264 to do the streaming, and the actual bit of software is going to be a web runtime widget. So that should mean that pretty much all the N series phones on S60 third edition feature pack 1 and above will run it, and also most of the other feature pack 1 phones. There are some that haven't been upgraded to have H.264 and web runtime, but you know, devices like the E71, you know, the 6220, they should all be compatible, so it's going to have pretty good compatibility. It may be a little while before the software comes out for that device, because I suspect the BBC will want to do some testing. It's being preloaded on N96, is being sold in the UK. The interesting thing, people may have used this on the iPod Touch or the iPhone, or indeed on the website. I imagine most people use it that way. But the actual quality of the streaming is going to be slightly lower on the phone. And this is actually, ironically, not due to the fact that the phone can handle it, because it can handle the iPhone streams absolutely fine. But I think it's because the BBC are planning to use the same stream more generically in mobile phones, and I suspect that will be available via a BBC mobile website. And so they've just cut down the bitrate and the resolution slightly from the iPlayer version, which it's itself cut down slightly from the PC version.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is going to be whether the BBC are going to allow you to stream programs live, or whether you're only allowed to see things that have already aired. And that's actually a very important argument in the UK, because if you're watching programs live, your phone is going to need a TV license. If you're watching a delayed program, i.e. something that's been on and you're just watching it 2 days later, then you're watching a pre-rec and you don't need a TV license. But because mobiles are actually mobile, it doesn't actually come under the household regulations. It's like a television in a caravan or something here. So if they have a live option, and live here means as if you're watching it on television, so just putting it through 5 second delay is not going to count the BBC. If it says here's BBC News live, even though there's cache and everything, that counts as live. It may be that this forces every person with a phone to conform with the TV license, and that's going to open up a big hill of beans one way or the other.
Ewan manages to find the cloud in every silver lining.
What are you, Scottish?
Ooh, I think we'd better be careful on topics like that, Steve.
All right. Okay, and now over to Rolf.
Another in-joke which we won't bore you with. Just to mention that I've been playing a lot with the BBC iPlayer on the iPod Touch and the iPhone, and I know I shouldn't mention that on an All About Symbian podcast, but it really is quite staggering quality in terms of what the BBC stream. I accept the fact they're going to degrade it slightly for a mobile phone use, but I'm really hoping they don't dumb it down too much, because as you say, the most S60 phones can handle a pretty stonking bitrate. The big news this week, anyway, let's move on. Big news this week, of course, is the arrival of Google One under the T-Mobile brand. Rafe, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, I'll just summarise this very quickly. So what's happened, this is actually the T-Mobile launched in the States at an event in New York, although it's also going to be coming to the UK in November and the rest of Europe in early 2009. they've launched the G1, which is the first Android-powered mobile phone. And Android is, of course, the operating system and software platform from Google. So inside, there's two bits of significance here, the actual first appearance of the Android platform on a shipping device and the G1 itself. And we'll just cover the G1 quickly, and we may come back to Android later on. The G1 is a kind of a Sidekick-esque device in that it's got a big touchscreen, but it's also got a keyboard that sort of flicks out from underneath. And it's a fairly generously sized keyboard, so you should be able to get some pretty decent text entry speeds on it. I've spoken to someone who was having a play with one. They said the hardware is surprisingly solid, but there are a few down points as far as sort of the high-end S60 user is concerned. The camera comes in at about 3 megapixels. It does have autofocus, although apparently it's very slow to lock and there's no video recording possible. There's also relatively low specs in terms of the memory on board. You're going to have a micro SD card to do anything with it, and it'll be shipping with a 1 gigabyte card. Given them what we're used to these days and getting music onto it, that might be an interesting decision. The other things that came out about it were it's going to be tied very heavily into Google services. Now, you'll probably remember that when Android was first announced, part of the big deal was that, you know, it was very open, you can use whatever you liked on it. But at least in this first handset, it's going to be relatively locked down in that you'll need a Gmail account in order to be able to get your email and your contacts and calendars set up, and that will all be syncing up onto Google services. There's no potential for syncing with your PC. Now, that's either a good or a bad thing. We may discuss that in a bit, but it's certainly an interesting limitation. It's going to retail for $179, but that is with a two-year contract. In the UK, it will be free on a contract. So, again, it'll be similar to the other smartphones that are currently on the market. What else do we need to know about it? It's got Wi-Fi and a GPS in it. So in that terms, it's relatively well specified. But the multimedia credentials are a bit lacking, as I mentioned, with the camera. But also, there's no video playing software on board. So out of the box, at least, you can't play video. It is promised that you'll be able to download a video player application. That will happen via the Android Marketplace, which is Google's equivalent of an app store for easy application downloads. And we're expecting to see quite a lot of developer activity, although perhaps it will be a little while to catch on, because relatively speaking, it probably won't have the number of devices out there immediately that either the iPhone does or indeed something like S60 has. But given it's the first appearance of Android, it has indeed happened as they promised around for the fourth quarter of this year. Originally it looked like there might going to be a delay, but they seem to have got it out on time. But this is the first version, so I wouldn't necessarily expect too much from it, but probably an interesting sign of things to come. I don't know if either of you have had a look at it. Ewan, did you have any opinion on this?
I find the marketing behind this amazing, and the fact that, you know, it's I'm going to get some brickbats for this, but it's like the Second World War. Europe fought over the smartphone for all these years. All of a sudden, halfway through, the Americans turn up with their iPhone and their Android, and it's like the world has suddenly discovered smartphones. It's like, we've been here, you know, we've been through Dunkirk, we've been through Dresden, now you guys are swanging along and taking them all the way to the Pacific Rim. Thank you very much. Yes, all complaints should be sent to steve.litchfield@gmail.com. Seriously though, it's good, because anything that grows the ecosystem and grows up the idea that you can have multiple operating systems in your smartphone, that you can have open coding, that you can have a generic app store and a brand app store, and you can run them on your website as well. I think that Nokia's not been able to get that message over, and Symbian certainly hasn't in the US. I think that Google is actually going to show people that there are alternatives, and I actually think that that gives Nokia a little bit of a beachhead, because what they need to make sure now is that device comparisons and magazines don't go down to Google versus Apple. They need to get Google versus Apple versus Nokia, and that's where the US marketing department should be acting like ninjas.
Yeah, from my point of view, just to give my reaction to the appearance of the G1 and watching all the launch videos and poring over the feature sheets, the big thing that's flags up in my mind is maturity. Yes, this is very, very early days, obviously. Building a real-time 3.5G multimedia operating system. It's hard. We've said it before now. Things like the N95 from Nokia, it was released 2 years ago. Only now, in the last few weeks, with its version 30 firmware update, has it really got to the state where it is complete. It won't take Google that long. It's taking Apple about a year or so. They've gone up to version 2.1 of their OS now for the iPhone, and it's still quite flaky and buggy in places. You ask some of the users. It's going to take a good few months of extra development, and the Android will be fully ready for the real world. The other two points I just want to flag up is it's a very distinct form factor, the G1. If anyone listening to this wanted to bring it up on Google with the slide-out screen with it revealing the keyboard, you've really got to like that form factor and the slidey, whistly bits. I have to say that I would be more looking for something in terms of the E71 form factor with the Google and a fixed QWERTY keyboard with less moving bits, less bits for sand and fluff and dust to get in and get stuck under. So I'm sure we'll see a bigger range of form factors in the coming months and on different networks and perhaps made by different manufacturers. So that remains to be seen. But there will be future different form factors, and I'm looking for future devices, not the G1 specifically. Also, of course, having to buy it with a 2-year contract. That's just as with people like myself and many others around the world who have balked at buying an iPhone or any other device like that with that sort of commitment, where you know that in 6 months' time you're going to be wanting something else. I just think that that's not for me. Again, we're looking here for Android devices to be available unlocked. I don't care if I've had to pay £400. I'll get 300 back on eBay in 6 months' time when I move on. And certainly for early adopters and power users, they're going to want unlocked devices, I suspect.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, Steve. It's interesting, you know, during the press conference, Google and T-Mobile and HTC, who are the manufacturers of this device, were very keen to stress how, you know, it was open and it was a new approach. And, you know, you get slightly tired of this kind of language because, you know, the idea of smartphones really has been about openness from day one. And I think some of the ways that open gets talked about is unhelpful in definition terms, and really, you know, Google isn't doing and T-Mobile aren't doing anything unique here. You know, the level of openness they have is actually less in some ways than what Nokia provide through its unlocked N series devices. Now, there is a potential, if you look technically into the licensing of Android, for it to be open in the sense that stuff can be very easily replaced. Now, that's actually going to be partly replicated by the Symbian Foundation, but even if you look at it now, the reality of it is that Android is likely to be more closed than Symbian. Now, there's a couple of reasons for this. The first of this is basically around indemnity. With the license that Android uses, the Apache 2 license, the OEMs have to take indemnity on themselves, which means they're probably going to end up tying down some of the more dangerous APIs and functions within the OS. Now, the exact pitch isn't clear yet, but it'll be interesting to see how that emerges. But as we've been talking about here, things like, you know, having to get it as a locked device, although T-Mobile do say it's going to be available effectively on a sort of pay-as-you-go like thing, and you'll be able to get it unlocked after 3 months of service, but that's still 90 days, which I think is a bit of an issue. And I have no doubt that there'll be sort of hacks coming along to be able to unlock the device, or, you know, jailbreak it, or whatever you want to call it. But it's also the attitude they're taking with some of the service and the sort of contract approaches for the generic market, which I have a little bit of an issue with, you know, calling this the most open phone ever. However, I do think it's significant, but I think it's probably fair to say that it's not really competing with something like, say, the iPhone or indeed the N-series devices. I think they all sit to a certain extent in their own niche, and of course there's crossover. But this particular Android phone, the G1, is, I think, more competing with the sort of Sidekick style of messaging device, and it's very clearly a consumer-orientated play. There is, for example, no provision to have Exchange access on this device, so no corporate email or contacts or calendar functionality. So as I say, so looking at things like the Sidekick devices, I think with that kind of messaging, especially with the strong play of Gmail and Google Talk on this device, I think that's really where it's being positioned. Its multimedia credentials, both in hardware and software terms, are very poor. And sort of some of the extra applications that you know, Google and T-Mobile talked about third-party developers providing just do give a feeling of a lack of maturity. But that's not to say we'll certainly take a closer look at it once it comes out in the UK. And I'm hoping to get a quick look at it next week at a T-Mobile press event, and I'll report back from there. So, Ewan, any more thoughts from you?
Yeah, it strikes me as being Google's 7650, the phone that gets out there and gives them market knowledge. That is appealing, that is sexy, but it's still aiming at a rather tightly focused group. And in this case, as you said, the sort of sidekick users that are consumers. Really, to give Google a very broad testing base, to have lots of people using the device to try out new things, to see what people are actually doing with it in the wild. Focus groups are one thing, actually having it with you down the pub when you've got a pint in you, playing some darts or watching baseball or whatever, is an entirely different matter. So I do think that this is not the G phone, it's a G phone. The G phone will probably come another 18 months down the line.
Yeah, I think it's probably worth emphasizing that, you know, these things do take a lot of time. And given how much this has been hyped, I think by others rather than all about Symbian, it's fair to say, always been a bit skeptical about what could be produced from the gate. You know, in some ways, I think a lot of people will be underwhelmed by this device because it's been held up as something that's sort of competing very much with the iPhone in a similar level of breakthrough, at least perception-wise, because we can argue that one till the cows come home. And I don't really think they're there with this device. I don't doubt it's going to do well, but ultimately what it comes down to is it's going to take them a lot longer to develop it, and in the meantime, everyone else is going to be continuing to develop things. So the message I'd really take home from this is that it's a good thing to see this sort of thing, because more competition in the market is good for consumers, and it drives awareness, especially in the American market, of what smartphones can do. But ultimately, I think there's still a question around just how much motivation Google might have for this in the long term. I think T-Mobile, it's very interesting, they've given up an awful lot with this device. You know, there aren't really any T-Mobile services on it. There are, you know, the Amazon MP3 service, and of course the Google Mail, Calendar and Map services. So T-Mobile is really just providing the service with this device, which that's a bit of a departure for them. But for someone like Google, you know, this is a way to get, you know, search, their search product and their maps and email products into consumer hands on mobile. And I wonder whether, you know, the motivation for pushing the OS is really there for the long term, given that they do have an agnostic approach to software platforms on mobile. You know, you can get Gmail and Calendar and Google Maps on, you know, Symbian, on Windows Mobile, on BlackBerry, you know, on feature phone through Java, and the experience may not be the same, but for Google, I still have a feeling a lot of it is about ad dollars, i.e., you know, that's their main revenue stream and will remain so for the foreseeable future. And if they can get their services onto phone, and it can be any phone, they can later on use their sort of advertising muscle to generate extra revenue through mobile advertising. To my mind, that's still the big push there. So I think that probably, we're going to come back to Android, I'm sure, in due course when we do some more direct comparisons. But it's certainly an interesting one to watch. And as I say, they'll start to become available in the States this time next month. In the UK, it's going to be 2 months' time. And in Europe, it'll be about 4 months' time. I think we've got time for one more topic on this insight. So we'll just have a quick look at Engage Games, and I know you've had some thoughts, Ewan, on the recent, I think it's Star Wars Unleashed, and we've also had the announcements of a couple of other games. Perhaps you'd like to fill us in on that.
Indeed, yes. Specifically, the fact that Engage is now starting to get named titles. And by named titles, I mean the titles that are coming out on other platforms that are known to gamers. So yes, we've just had Star Wars Force Unleashed last week, which was massive over multi-platform, over iPhone, over regular phone, Engage, plus things like your PSP, your Wii, your PS3s, and your Nintendo DSs. It was very nice to see that the Engage was included in that multi-platform mix. We've had announcements from Nokia in the last week that not only is the mobile version of Spore going to be coming to the Engage, which is build up from a bacteria to a massive civilization and conquer another planet somewhere after conquering your own. But we're also hearing now from the S60 blog that they will be bringing over Resident Evil, which is a very big license from Capcom.
It's going to be a movie tie-in with the film that's due out. Is it next year, Ewan?
That would involve me knowing stuff about movies that aren't really bad schlock horror starring Carey Elles. So pass on
okay.
That one.
I think I'm right in saying that this is a movie time, but as you say, it is, I think, probably one of the premier brands in gaming.
Yeah. And I think that's the point. You know, the N-Gage is being is not only being considered, but they've said, yes, we want to spend time developing our big games on these platforms. Rather interestingly, Electronic Arts had to recently delay the Harry Potter franchise of games because the film that was due out in November isn't now going to be out for 6 months. Now, that put a hole in their bottom line of $120 million for one multi-platform title. So there is a lot of money swishing around in these things. Now, admittedly, that Harry Potter tranche of games didn't feature with an N-Gage one, but it does put into perspective the sort of income that the companies like Activision, like Capcom, like EA can make when they actually bring all of these platforms under one roof with the constant game. The Force Unleashed in total has sold over 1 million copies over all those platforms in its first week of sale. That is really big for a game. Those are the sort of numbers that you expect to see from a movie release. And it's just nice. I remember talking this about a year ago. It's great having the N-Gage system, but we need to see the games industry picking up and adopting it as well. And I don't know whether these have just been in a long time coming to the boil and being coming out on show, or whether these have been decided in the last 6 or 7 months. Right, the N-Gage is working. It is finally out there. Let's do something. And it's taken this long to develop them. We don't yet know what the development cycle is publicly. It's just nice to see the platform growing, and growing in a way that gamers would expect it to grow.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, personally, I feel that Nokia would do well to release some N-Gage numbers, although I suspect they may not be as positive as they would like, simply because there aren't all that many phones shipping with the N-Gage client on board by default.
And certainly with the N-Gage numbers, you may remember at the start of the year, they offered 120,000 free licenses of FIFA 08. And up till about 2-3 weeks ago, I've not checked recently, that offer was still there on the website. So, you know, that tends me to think that the uptake in that sort of advertising isn't high. So it's still a bit of a mixed message. So I don't think they'll give out those sort of sales numbers until they're impressive.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. But perhaps this gaming trends, I mean, it certainly suggests there's a lot of momentum still behind it, and some of these big developers are signing on board does suggest they think there's potential in it as well. So, you know, at the moment, you know, I think N-Gage, it's probably fair to say, has been going through a bit of a sort of you know, terrible teenage years in its second version, because it's clearly some way away from being mature or being accepted. And, you know, there's the usual sniping after the honeymoon period. So maybe it's toddler is better.
Yeah, toddler is better, because we still got that maturing, getting good, then going rubbish again, and then being regarded as a classic, which is, in my mind,
a long way to go.
Yeah, so I think at the moment we're past that, oh, such a cute baby, and we're past the, why are they drawing crayons in the wall, and they're now at school and starting to bring home pictures that actually do look like people.
Yeah, but it'll be interesting to watch, because we're expecting fairly shortly some more roadmap details about the future of N-Gage to sort of roll out. There's, I think, the Nokia Game Summit in Rome is coming up shortly. I suspect we'll start hearing more about games created with the second version of the N-Gage SDK, which starts to tie in some of the more unique mobile aspects of N-Gage into sort of the game creation in an easier way for developers. And of course, there's going to be more devices on the way. And now that the sort of it's stable on Feature Pack 2, it's, you know, shipping with the N96, I suspect future devices, I'm thinking here things like the N79 and the N85, and the future devices that may be announced probably, say, next year now, we'll all ship with it out of the box. And I do think that will make a difference. And also, they're being smart in the marketing with, you know, offering a couple of game codes in box to encourage people to give it a go. And as we've said before, it really is a numbers game for Nokia. There are an awful lot of S-Series and S60 devices out there, and if Nokia chooses can get just a few of those users, you know, a percentage to convert to have a go with N-Gage, you know, they can create a quite significant market in terms of number of users who developers can reach through N-Gage if they get it right. There's still a lot of ifs there, but, you know, I think Ewan is perhaps right in suggesting there's certainly signs for cause of optimism. Would you agree with this?
I definitely agree with that. I suspect Nokia have been bankrolling a lot of the Engage development, even through the third-party houses in its first year. And I suspect that that's one of the lessons that they've learned from the first Engage, whereas there was lots of great opening titles, and then it just went quiet, and it took another 2 years for any sort of recognisable title to come back up again. Nokia were forced to start their own brands and their own in-house developments and give them prominence over things like, for example, we only ever saw one Sims game, we only ever saw one Tony Hawk game. It wouldn't surprise me if Nokia have committed a little bit more cash and the making sure that the people who are developing this first and second tranche of game releases aren't losing money.
Yeah.
And I suspect that that will die off, but a lot more slowly. I suspect that will carry on through next year as well. I have nothing to back that up. That's just my gut feel. But I think that to put that right now, we don't know what the financial numbers are of any of these deals. But I think that there will be a lot of help being given now, and that will die off over time as it's now on the handset, as it's now shipping, as the client starts to really snowball in terms of usage numbers. So as more people come on board, Nokia's sort of stabilizers on our toddler's bicycle will eventually come off and they will grow up to a BMX.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point. I think that's probably all the time we've got for on this week's Insight. I will just say we do get a few comments about the Engage content we do. Some people seem to really love it and some people really seem to hate it. So we put it at the end of this week's show. So for those of you that hate it, you've hopefully been able to skip over it and aren't even hearing me say that. But for those of you who do like it, here's a bit more, and no doubt once new games get announced and get reviewed, we'll be coming back to mention it again. So it's goodbye from me, Rafe Blanford.
Goodbye from me, Steve Litchfield. And goodbye from me, Ewan Spence.